let you off the hook. To use Lucy's time effectively and efficiently, we're now going to look at agenda item 5. So, Laurence, I'm very sorry you'll have to wait a little bit longer until we get to share-based payment.
Paper 5 revisits the issue of the fixed date and the derecognition exception that we dealt with in March. And this derecognition exception is in paragraph B2 of IFRS 1. We were asked to perform some outreach on the matter and to meet with the derecognition team to discuss the implications of the proposed standard on this issue. So on the outreach front, Appendix A of Paper 5, includes extracts of responses that we received from the National Standard Setters Group. And as discussed in paragraphs 4 to 10 of Paper 5, almost all the responses supported changing the fixed date in paragraph B2 from 1 January 2004 to a relative date being the date of transition to IFRSs. On the derecognition front, the derecognition ED that the team published in March 2009 proposed a consequential amendment to B2 of IFRS 1. They just said to change it to a date as yet unspecified, but I, from my understanding from them, it was more a relative date as opposed to an actual fixed date. And their comment letters, I believe, were broadly supportive of that as well. The derecognition team are aware of this issue now, and they're aware that we're discussing it here, and they confirmed that they would give it further consideration as they continue their finalization of their standard. Following that, we then performed an analysis of the three options that were suggested by the committee at the March 2010 meeting, being change the date to a relative date, or delete paragraph B2 altogether, or to make no change to current requirements. And this analysis is in paragraph 15. We then considered whether including an amendment to IFRS 1 B2, if that's the route that the committee decides, whether we should put this through the annual improvements ED, currently to be issued in October 2010, would that provide the required relief in sufficient time for those jurisdictions who are currently transitioning or those who will transition in the near future? Our recommendation in paragraph 22 then is to change the fixed date to the date of transition to IFRSs, being that relative date, and that this amendment be made as soon as possible. So questions 1 to 2 can really be dealt with together, asking whether the committee agrees with this recommendation, given all the information provided in the paper.
Right.
I agree with switching to a relative date, but as I said last time, I think because one of the concerns concerning the relative date was that there might be structuring around this issue, that we might switch to 1 year before date of transition to IFRS. So not the date of transition, but 1 year before the date. So we avoid structuring a little bit more than we have it going to transition to IFRS.
Okay. Joanna?
I support the relative date, but only if the derecognition team do, because I think that it's really important that it is the same between the two. And if you think that we can and should get it through as an amendment sooner rather than later, then I support that too.
Okay. I mean, part of the reason for the staff asking the question of the members of this committee is that that helps to inform the derecognition team on whatever their proposal is going to be and whenever their proposal is going to be issued. So I agree we shouldn't be proposing something here that is very different from what they have. Thanks. Laurence?
I support the amendment, and I support issuing it as soon as possible, and I would like to have some information about timings. What would be the consequence if we say as soon as possible? What might be the scenario in terms of timing?
Not tomorrow.
No, but what is the process? How long would it take? How long do you think it might be? How would it work?
Well, we could include the amendment in a separate ED. and take that through the board that way instead of including it into freedom. So I guess
in June,
I'm scared to nail my colours to the mast here if my boss do it wrong.
There are a few improvements to IFRS 1 that have been identified, some of which we'll bring to you today. There are others that are also being considered as part of other projects as well. Now, it needs to be balanced, of course, with the board's workload already, and they've already got a full agenda. So it's a case of, is there any way in which additional time could be found on the board agenda to push something through more quickly? At the moment, annual improvements is scheduled for the coming cycle for an exposure draft to be issued, published in early October, but still with the objective of issuing the final IFRS by sort of April, May next year, so similar to the normal time frame. Obviously, for those entities that are transitioning in 2011, then that is, it's probably too late, or it's a bit too late for those that are going to be doing quarterly reporting at the end of March 2011. It may not come in time, particularly if they've got to do preparation. So that's our concern there. If we could find a way of pushing it through as a separate ED in the board, then I think that would be preferable, but certainly I can't guarantee that we'd be able to do that.
I'm thinking about the ones that are transitioning in 2010.
Too late. That's already done. In fact, for most of them, again, and John will know, perhaps from his colleagues, that those who are transitioning in 2011 will probably by now have done all of the work to identify what transactions they had previously de-recognized under their national gap that they're now going to have to re-recognize because of the current provisions of IFRS. So I don't think it's going to bring any relief to any real relief to the 2011 people. And in fact, from an investor perspective, I'm not sure of the benefit necessarily of allowing them to do that. If they've done all of the work, so all the cost has been included, the benefit is actually having assets that are your assets, liabilities that are your liabilities, on the face of the financial statements rather than grandfathering something that was taken off. Those of us that remember what happened over the past couple of years are a little sensitive about things that are not on the balance sheet that might come back and haunt people later. If there is anything left that hasn't come back to haunt everybody, of course, might have all come out by now. Guido.
Just thinking about the question that was asked, B2, for those that are applying IFRS 9, the new derecognition rules for the ones that have the transition date 1st of January 2010, B2 wouldn't apply because that refers to IFRS 39 and not IFRS 9. So, I agree, it probably comes too late for them because B2 doesn't actually apply to them who use the new IFRS 9 rules, the derecognition rules. But what I wanted to say was something else. I'm still a little bit worried, or maybe you can help me there. What is the interaction between the transition rules that we expect for the new derecognition rules in IFRS 9 as compared to IFRS 1? Because in this paper, there's one place where it said there might be a consequential amendment to B2 when the derecognition rules are out. So are we changing it now, and then the derecognition rules come out, and there might be a consequential amendment, or is it that the transition rules of IFRS 9 look at what we propose now, and they would take that into consideration.
That's it.
Because, which is interesting that IFRS 1 really, or what we propose here, has an effect on the transition rule in a standard for which also applies for preparers that already apply IFRS. It's interesting. So maybe we may want to consider another approach, just referring in IFRS 1 to the transition rules in the new derecognition standard, but exchanging the effective date for the transition date.
So that we but at the moment, we don't know what the transition provisions are in the exposure draft that hasn't been balloted dealing with derecognition. But this is informing that team. They have to make a decision, first of all, about what general transition is for IFRS adopters, current IFRS adopters, to adopting the new derecognition proposals. When they've decided what that is, then that's the time to consider what would be the impact for first-time adopters, because, of course, they don't get the benefit of those general transition provisions. So it's a question of whether they have the same provisions or not. Yes. These provisions were introduced because of the transition provisions in the amendment to 39 originally, and that's why they've been left the same. So there really is no difference between those two at the moment.
But it's just for the 39 employers, it comes too late anyway. But for the IFRS 9 employers, they can only apply IFRS 9 derecognition when it's out there, and then we already have the transition rules. So I still think we may want to look at this option that we just refer to the transition rules in the new development derecognition standard, just exchange transition date for effective date.
But in terms of timing, that means you would have to wait until the derecognition standard was issued. And we have that. And the question that has been raised with us is that something we can do sooner. But we need to be consistent, as Joanna pointed out, we need to be consistent. So if, and I haven't forgotten about your suggestion, which is 1 year before transition, because I haven't heard a lot of people supporting that or even commenting on it, as to whether that's a recommendation we take across to the derecognition team to think about. But certainly there are some of my colleagues on the board who are very concerned about structuring opportunities in these transitions. But for somebody who's transitioning from 39 to IFRS 9, or from 39 into the new derecognition proposal, whatever that number is going to be, they won't face the same issue that the first-time adopter faces, because they've already been accounting for the transactions in accordance with IFRS since 2004. So it now is the focus on, well, what about somebody who's coming in for the first time who had national GAAP before, not IFRS, and are they going to start tweaking their balance sheet before they officially adopt? Or are we going to say, no, you just go back to 2004? So that's the issue. Let's take Scott Town.
I don't conceptually have a problem necessarily with using a relative date, but I'm a little concerned at trying to speed through an amendment, because it's a change in the principle that led to the original exception in IFRS 1. The original exception was not, we want to be easier on first-time adopters than on continuing IFRS users. It's, we don't want to be harder on them. Right? So everybody applies it from January 1, 2004 forward. The exception stopped first-time adopters from having to go back further than that when those who had already been on IFRS wouldn't have had to go back further than that. If we change the exception to the relative date, now we're changing the principle. We've now decided we want to be easier on first-time adopters than we want continuing IFRS users. That's a, I think, fairly significant change, and I'm a little bit concerned about trying to get that done quickly, unless, as Joanna points out, we are very confident that the board and the staff working on the current derecognition project now believe that the right principle to use is go easier on first-time adopters than on continuing IFRS users. If we're confident that that's what the board and the staff believe, then I feel a little bit better about trying to speed through an amendment. As to Bernd's suggestion or other suggestions regarding structuring, since I live in the capital of structuring and am asked a question about repo 105s at least daily, I already got an email today asking for comment on repo 105. I certainly have structuring concerns. If I'm hypothetical situation, let's say that a U.S. regulator decides very late in 2011 that beginning in 2016, U.S. companies will be filing under IFRS. The date of transition for those companies, depending upon how many years they have to file, would either wind up being January 1, 2014 or January 1, 2015. And if we have a date that says, you know, you need to account for it under our derecognition rules from the date of transition to IFRS, well, congratulations, you guys got 2 or 3 years to structure your transactions, decide what you want on the books in your opening IFRS statement, use the U.S. GAAP rules between now and then to get them off the books, and then you don't have to worry. Absolutely, that will happen if we write it this way. So the question we have to ask is whether we're comfortable with that happening, because if we write it this way, we can't stop it. We can't then come back and say, well, you were trying to abuse, so we're not going to let you take advantage of it. And so writing it this way will specifically allow that structuring. And that, I mean, so there are, you know, there's a price made when you transition accounting standards. Sometimes ugly things get through, and we just kind of, you know, have to accept that as a cost of moving. But, you know, we ought to at least be conscious that in this case, it wouldn't be just that we're not writing a standard to stop abuse. It's that we're writing a standard that specifically allows it.
Okay. I'm not sure I could defend that as a principle. Andrew?
Well, I think I'm okay with the relative date, and if we're going to go to a relative date, it seems to me that the date of transition is the obvious one. I understand the point about structuring, but to pick a period 1 year before transition seems to be somewhat odd, a bit of an odd exception. And is derecognition the only thing where we can get structuring? Will we use 1 year before transition increasingly going forward if we have to consider these things? So I think it is part of the price of transition and should just bite the bullet and go for date of transition.
I see Scott's point, and that's why, again, I would like to bring up the view that maybe we should look or refer to the new recognition rules in new IFRS 9. If they tell us you have to go retrospectively for some of these issues, we should have the same rules for first-time adopters and not easier rules for them. So, what at the end of the day the rules are in IFRS 9 should also be applied for.
That's why I said you can inform them. So, I want to know what your view is. Do you think it should be retrospective? That, because then that would help the derecognition team to make their proposals to the board.
But you have to tell me what the new derecognition rules look like. Tell you whether I think you can.
Okay. All right. So you're not willing to take a decision at the moment. I
having listened to what Scott and others have said about structuring, I think we have that issue with many standards. This is obviously a particularly sensitive one at the moment. If the US were going to come out and say that they are adopting IFRS in 2016, I'd probably be so happy I wouldn't worry about structuring, but I'm not sure that's going to. Yeah, I think that would be a very positive thing if that happened, and so I'm not sure that we can try to deal with standards in the anticipation that something like that might happen, because we don't know if it will, if it ever will. I do think it should be linked to the derecognition standard. And the reason I'm saying that is if we think about the exemptions in IFRS 1 that have a fixed date, I think before we make a quick decision about changing this one to get to date of transition, we should look at all of them that have a fixed date. And I see we've got Agenda Paper 5A, which said, oh, hang on, there's another one that's got a fixed date. I think we need to think about them all together before we make a rushed decision or ask the board to rush something through on one. So if we could look at them all, and I don't know off the top of my head, how many other fixed dates are there? Is 5A the only other one? And why are they there? Are they there because of the old IS-39? What was the reason they're there? And then can we look at, well, what's happening with IS-39? So I guess to Guido's point. And let's try and recreate that same link between the new IFRS 9 and IFRS 1 if that was the reason for the fixed date in IFRS 1, recreated with a later date. I agree that 2004 and 2002 don't make sense anymore, but there might be another fixed date that makes more sense in the context of the new derecognition standard. That might alleviate some of Scott's concerns. But it does mean that it's not a relative date. It does mean that it's yet another fixed date, but at least there's a reason for the fixed date, and that's linked to the new standard. And that might be more palatable to new first-time adopters who can say, OK, I don't have to go back to 2002 or 4. I have to go back to 2009. And that's not as bad as having to go back 10 years. So I'm not sure we should rush it. But I think we should... I know the derecognition team is asking for guidance from us, but I would say to them, what date would you like to put in as your retrospective application date? And let's think about whether that should be linked into IFRS 1.
Yeah, the sense that's coming through, really, Michael, is that members of the committee don't think it's as urgent as perhaps some of the petitioners did. Do you want to comment at all on whether there are any other hardwired dates that you think may or may not be addressed in addition to the one in 5A?
The only hardwired dates that we do have really in IFRS 1 are the ones addressed in Papers 5 and 5A. The only other reference to a date relates to share-based payments, but I don't see that as being a particular issue. Certainly nobody has written to us raising that as an issue. So I think those are the only hardwired dates. There are there's at least one other issue, which we've also got a paper on for this meeting as well, to do with borrowing costs and IFRS 1, where that's a different issue. That's just an issue connected with the clarification as to what's really meant by that particular exception. Certainly, I think collecting them together makes sense, because if we're going to make a number of amendments to IFRS 1, then let's bundle them up together. The people who are going to be most concerned about those amendments are obviously the prospective first-time adopters, and so they, you know, giving them the opportunity to comment on those collectively makes a lot of sense, see what the overall impact would be.
Thanks, Michael. Tack?
I think fixed value date doesn't solve the problem of structuring. Structuring may happen whenever new accounting standard comes. I mean, so structuring may have happened before the 2004 January 1st. So then even if we make new hardwired date, then structuring may happen before that hardwired date. And therefore, I rather prefer transition date. Of course, I have same feeling that there might be a chance for structuring, but this is the things which may happen for every accounting standard, and I think we have to live with it. So, and on the other hand, if we change the fixed wire date to the date of transition, it will be a great help for the entities in the jurisdiction transitioning to the IFRS. So compared to the benefit and the cost, I think the benefit is far away than the cost.
Thanks. Alison?
I guess in terms of the point of structuring, regardless of the date, I think that there's the potential for structuring one way or the other. But has there been thought given to, and this is, of course, from a regulator perspective, but has there been thought given to the disclosures that you could put around that to help just with transparency in order to lessen the potential for abuse in terms of the transitional disclosures that you would have around this?
One of the difficulties, I think, with disclosure is that you'll be asking people to disclose derecognition transactions that don't meet the derecognition conditions that we now have, but did meet the previous gap, which is rather like telling people to do all the work anyway.
Yep.
And if they've done all of that work, then actually the principle of IFRS 1 was put on the balance sheet your assets that are your assets, take off any that aren't. put on your liabilities that are your liabilities, take off any that aren't. And the purpose of this exemption was to say, but in the case of something that you derecognized that wasn't there, in looking for assets and liabilities that should be there, you don't need to look at any of these derecognition transactions before a particular date. So that was quite a major concession, I think. Certainly, it was a cost issue for many people as to if we did have to bring them on, then we've got to keep on looking back because some of these derecognition transactions have a very long duration. The other concern that we had and always do have is the use of hindsight wherever fair value considerations have to be made. And obviously, the further back you have to look, the more difficult it is to say objectively what your judgment would have been on fair value at that point in time. So disclosures may help. It's something that we can think about, but it may not actually ease the pain as much as we may like to think. Peggy?
Again, this applies primarily to financial service entities, but I would think that in their previous GAAP before transitioning to IFRS, I'm thinking from a U.S. GAAP perspective, there probably would be a lot of disclosures around these types of transactions anyway. So any investors and analysts who are looking at the conversion from previous GAAP to IFRS, they'd be pretty aware that the stuff is not on the balance sheet to begin with. So I think from a transparency perspective, it might not be as big of a deal as what we are thinking it would be.
Okay, good point. Scott?
I take what Peggy said, that there's certainly some possibility of that, although I never underestimate the possibility for lack of transparency when we're dealing with financial instrument transactions, because every time I think I'm getting a little comfortable with what's going on, something else blows up. To Allison's point, with respect to disclosures about structuring, I've always been one and have said it publicly several times that I think in concept we can require disclosures about structured transactions because it doesn't fall into the problem that you talked about, Bob, of you need to go back and reassess all your old transactions. No, we're looking for the transactions that you purposely structured. We're not talking about go back and review the ones that you did without a thought to accounting standards and figure out whether they would have met or failed. We're talking about disclosures about the ones that you did completely with the accounting standards in mind. So, of course, that's the problem, right? In this area, almost, such a large percentage of them are. But that's fine. It wouldn't be extra work, is my point. They've already done the work because that's what drove the transaction in the first place. My concern about those kinds of disclosures is whether those are disclosures that an accounting standard setter should require or whether they are disclosures that the regulator should require. I tend to think that they're actually better for the regulator to require than the standard setter. But I do think it can be done. There isn't an issue of extra work because they already did the work to get the accounting they desired in the first place. So it is something that can be done if we wanted to.
Okay. I was trying to be more empathetic to those people in the parts of the world that are not so financially sophisticated and therefore inadvertently may have done something that for the benefit of reading IFRS they wouldn't have done now.
We'd have to write it carefully to make sure that the innocent ones didn't get caught.
Okay. But I think the message that is coming back from the members of the committee is quite clear that the derecognition team has to think about what it is doing, what it's going to be proposing. So that's going to assist whether we want to do anything now. For those who are transitioning to IFRS in 2010 or 2011, they've probably done all of the work they need to identify these transactions. It's not something that we'd recommend goes through as an urgent change at this stage. Do you want to address any of the issues in 5A as well at this this point.
Sorry, so are we saying then that we're supporting the relative date but put it into annual improvements, or do I need to go back to the derecognition team?
We're saying we've got some sympathy for the relative date, but we'd also like to know what the derecognition team is proposing for its changes, because those are going to be exposed in the short term as well. So it's not just a question of what people are going to do on this one that's hardwired, but if the derecognition proposals come through, then say, you know, anything that was off under the old rules stays off, that is, that the new requirements are prospective, then it will give more weight to an argument to use a relative date that is date of transition. And if they come up and say, well, no, we'd like you to restate on a retrospective basis or a limited basis, I'm not sure what they're going to propose, some previous transactions, then I think that will have a bearing on what we view as to the period of relativity. If we decide it is a relative date, I think there's a lot of support for date of transition, because that's a clear figure and that's the beginning to go forward. And there the principle is, well, we'll allow you to do whatever you did before. We recognize that there is some structuring. Perhaps the suggestion about somebody, whether it's the regulator or ourselves, needs to have disclosure of what was previously one of these structured transactions that resulted in derecognition. Whether that information is given but without restatement would be helpful.
Paper 5A is very similar insofar as the date that's in Paper 5A was put in there. Well, there are two dates, but like the one that's most relevant is January 1, 2004, is put in there for the same reason. 5A deals with the fixed date in Exemption D20 and IFRS 1, which relates to day one differences that may arise. IFRS requires that those day one differences are deferred. Other gaps do not. So transitioning to IFRS would mean a major change for first-time adopters, and they'd have to go back and restate and go through all of these, potentially restate, and go through all of the hoops that the derecognition complainants would have to do, same kind of issue. They don't think in a lot of cases the information would be available and so on. So in this case, we're kind of putting it in the same bucket and saying we could change that to a relative date as well. But given the discussion we've had on this and when it should be done, I can't imagine that we would treat this one differently to the one that's dealt with in B2, paper 5.
I think that's probably a good anticipation of what people might say, but we probably should ask them if they agree or not. But really, I think we'd be proposing from the staff side that when we have some clarity on what to do about the derecognition hardwired date, we can take this item at the same time and come up with a consistent judgment. It either is a rolling retrospective, or we just leave it as it is.
Yeah.
Andrew?
Paper 5 does explicitly say that the derecognition team support the change to relative date. Is that so there's obviously been consultation with them, but is that them still keeping their minds open as to what happens on the main derecognition ED, or do we need...
When we spoke to them, they hadn't given it a huge amount of thought further than what they'd put in the ED. They could see the point. They thought a relative date would make sense, but they haven't drafted their transition requirements to any great final point. So they really didn't feel, you know, they supported and they agreed with us, but didn't really commit to the fact that they would put that into their final standard. And I don't think they're in a position to, quite frankly. And I did ask them to join us, at least one of them, in the session, but they had 100 other things on, so we can't get the input, unfortunately.
In a way, their expression of views is similar to a lot of the national standard setters whose views we canvassed, who are sympathetic to the fact that you shouldn't have a hardwired date, that it should be something that is allowed to move forward. Otherwise, it benefits unduly adopters at one point in time and disadvantages others. The counter to that always is, well, if people are thinking of transitioning, as I'm sure Alison and her colleagues are thinking of that all the time, then you're aware of what the requirements are and you can prepare for those. But we do know, of course, that there are many people who only think about the requirements when it gets close to the date on which they have to do it, and then suddenly realize there's a lot of looking back that might have to be done. So I think everybody is sympathetic to saying the purpose of IFRS 1 seemed to be the principle of making it relatively easier to adopt IFRS than if you had to assume that you had always applied IFRS, which was the old SIG 8 approach. And then the question is, well, just how far do we go down the line? Because the purpose of financial reporting is to improve the quality of information to investors. And if deliberately we are now saying we're going to take off and we're going to allow you an opportunity to take off your balance sheet, things that are of significant interest to investors, then that's a big leap. Right, so would everybody be comfortable if we report back to the relevant financial instrument teams and say that this is an issue that they need to think about as they're producing their exposure draft? It's important to advise first-time adopters under the new proposals, and that when we've got those proposals, we can then consider or reconsider if there's a need to issue on a more expeditious basis some modification or proposed modification for the current wave of first-time adopters who will be adopting the existing standards.
And just from a an interest in time perspective, if this could be urgent for companies that will be transitioning very shortly, assuming that the conversations with the derecognition team go in alignment with what we propose here, would this be something that we would perhaps vote on in advance of the next meeting, that we could do via a conference call or an email?
I have a sense that with the current workload that's going to be going to the board, that the derecognition team won't have come close to finalizing their proposals by the end of quarter two. But my expectation and hope is that they would finalize in quarter three. So it may be that we would have something that possibly would be available at the July meeting, an inclination of that. Get a sense of what that would be, but that wouldn't be then based on any discussions at the board. But again, we can have our discussions, make a recommendation in effect that the board would consider, take it forward. All right. Rather than start on, thank you for all of that, Lucy. May not have been the answer you were looking for, but yeah, if you win some, you lose some others.
I cease to be surprised about what happens.
Spoken like a trooper. Rather than starting on agenda paper three now, I suggest we take a break for lunch, an early lunch. I would like, if it's possible, to be back at 1:15. That's all right with everybody. I'm sorry if it inconveniences some of our observers' plans, but... 1:15, Luca, that's 2:15 in real time.
Yes, in Rome it's 2:15, it's okay for me.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.